I know.
You see.
Somehow the world can change for me.
And be so wonderful. Welcome back to episode 13 of the Gradient Podcast. As always, I am Evan.
I'm Jaden.
And I'm Armand.
And iCarly returning to Netflix isn't the only thing that's going to be returning to your life, because just like iCarly, great things come in packages. Gradient Podcast is back.
We are back.
From a very short hiatus, we are back
and very short.
Here to bring you some of the great content you've been missing for the whole almost a month, was it?
So, you know, aligned with a very short hiatus, there were a lot of things that we missed. So episode 13 is going to be dedicated to a lot of these small recaps that happened in the past month, but also something that we really want to focus on. So, you know, starting off with that recap, I think, you know, the first thing that a lot of people are going to, you know, come to mind when they think of the past month has to be impeachment. Donald Trump is now the only president to be impeached twice. He was acquitted by the Senate. So how do you guys feel about that?
I think a lot of credit should be given to Mitt Romney for sort of spearheading the Republican support to impeach Donald Trump, even though he did get acquitted. It didn't go as planned for the Democratic Party. But before we delve deeper into that, I think it's important to provide a little bit of context on the situation. So, Evan, will you like to do the honors?
Of course. So, I'm sure most of our American viewers are more than well aware of what happened with the insurrection. But to our one German friend, Hans, if you're out there, that's what we've called you. He's been a loyal member of the Gradient Podcast fan
day one,
episode one. One of our most loyal members. So if you're out there, this is for you. To our one German viewer and to any other international viewers who might not be as well aware of what happened on January 6th, 2021.
It was January 6th?
January 6th, I know, which is a little bit startling to think about how long it's been. Because it feels like a lot longer, but even thinking about it, it even feels shorter. It's in this weird in-between where it feels like a long time ago as well as a very short time ago.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but before we like specifically delve into it, this event, the insurrection, that is the context that we're going to go over in a bit. I feel like an equivalent to like historical times, it's like the Boston Massacre. That's what it reminds me of. It's like a modern day version of that.
Mm-hmm. We can get into that later. Although I would like to mention that it's very interesting that we can all easily remember the date of it, because it is such a, like, even though it was recent, it is such a significantly historical event that it's very easy to remember the date. But so on January 6th, 2021, a large mob of American citizens, mostly Trump supporters, of former President Donald Trump, stormed the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. Some broke in. There's some footage has been released of them storming down the halls, grabbing, you know, taking blunt objects and hitting members of the authorities with them. Overall, it was just a really gruesome day for American history. And so that's just a little bit of context about, you know, why the impeachment, why the second impeachment, and how it was it's just kind of context for like the exigence of this the second impeachment, why it was ordered by the Senate. So obviously this wasn't something like that occurred, you know, off of a whim. This was planned for a couple days. That's why you had so many people come from, you know, out of state, you know, places that are nowhere near Washington, D.C., you know, places like Florida that are quite a ways away from Washington, D.C., you know, a couple hour drive. So, you know, people were definitely planning ahead for this event, for this day. There were some, you know, more than likely were looking forward to it. I don't really think there were that many like local DC residents that joined in. I think the majority of the people that were there came to DC for the specific reason of storming the Capitol. I don't think there were any people there that kind of just you know, joined in for fun.
Saw it and like, hey.
Yeah. Like, you know, right? no one hitched a ride along and was like, oh, you know, this seems like a good idea. I'll try and do this. You know, this might turn out pretty well. I don't think there's anyone right. like that.
So moving back to impeachment, do we think that Donald Trump, you know, helped to incite the riot, and is he deserving of being acquitted?
See, I would have to agree. So on your first question, I mean, I think I agree with Mitch McConnell here. You know, Senate Minority Leader, that like Trump was solely responsible for the riot. Mitch McConnell, in his closing remarks, you know, ushered a similar sentiment where he believed that, you know, Trump was solely responsible for what happened on the 6th. The only reason that he voted to acquit was because of the constitutional argument of that there's that the Constitution does not allow for a non executive branch individual to be impeached. Because Trump is no longer the president, he can't be impeached, because it's only that is a process only reserved for executive branch officials.
So, you know, I know Evan and I, you and I both agree that, you know, Mitch McConnell's decision to acquit, you know, was the wrong decision, you know, that President Trump should have been found guilty. But I think we have to ask ourselves, you know, what does it say that, you know, as a country we're so divided, and that we have people in Congress who've been there for decades upon decades who, you know, I want to say aren't really with the times anymore?
I think you need a little bit of clarification. Well,
I think it's interesting you mentioned, because, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe there were, so we know there's a 50-50 split.
It was seven Republicans.
I was going to say, it's either six or seven. It was seven Republicans, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is historically the largest number of...
it was the most bipartisan impeachment in history.
Right, exactly. Those are the words I was looking for. So, you know, that kind of puts into perspective that, you know, while we are very divided, you know, 50-50 split is, you know, it's a 50-50 split in the Senate, you know, that speaks for itself. There is still some common ground there. We had, I mean, 57-43. But I think this kind of brings up the larger topic, and I don't want to get into it too much because we have other things to talk about in this episode, but I think this kind of brings up the larger issue of, you know, if we're going to have a 50-50 Senate and everything's going to be incredibly partisan, where, you know, all Democrats will vote for one thing and all Republicans will vote for a different thing, you know, we've had in these past years a historically sedentary Senate Congress where very little action is being done. So, you know, just this kind of foretell that there will be practically nothing done, you know, going into the future.
So when you say that, you talk about you don't want to delve in deep into it more, but then you just followed it up with a very like concrete statement. So I think
my apologies.
A little bit of backing there. Obviously there is some weight and a lot of weight to that claim, because as much as a 57-43 split is the most bipartisan impeachment in U.S. history, only seven people voting on the opposite side is still a very rigid government, right? So what sort of political action needs to be taken to make everything a little more uniform?
So I think it's not about, you know, uniformity, because naturally people are going to have differing opinions. But I also think it's really important that, you know, we as a population, we as citizens, you know, kind of assess and analyze that there are people in Congress now who have been there for the majority of their lives. And, you know, the younger demographics of people and the new people coming out of school and the new people who are trying to get into politics, do they have a better grasp and better understanding of, you know, the times? Like, are these old politicians really still the best people to represent us, you know, today?
I personally don't think it's a matter of age in politics, maybe a little bit, because I'm sure
not their physical age, but like, you know, the amount of time they've been in politics, for example.
Okay, but nevertheless, I think the emphasis for a more sort of analytical government, as you put it, is shift the emphasis from less of voting on the particular party you are affiliated with, rather than the policy or candidate themselves. So often we're shoved in this notion that, oh, I'm a Democrat, on the ballot I'm going to vote everything Democrat, right? But and obviously the same thing with Republican, but I think we need to motivate educating society more to have opinions on specific policies rather than people themselves.
So moving on from, you know, the impeachment trial and the insurrection that happened at the Capitol to something else that happened in Washington, D.C., 2021, the inauguration, Joe Biden has been officially, you know, sworn in as president.
So before we delve deeper into Joe Biden's sort of goal to unify the American population as much as possible amid the current very tense political landscape, I think the biggest takeaway from this inauguration was how incredible Lady Gaga's national anthem was.
Thoughts? Very good.
I think it's up there with like top three ever, next to like Whitney Houston
and Fergie.
Oh, incredible! Literal chills, boys.
Yeah, I think actually the music was quite nice for the inauguration. Just Garth Brooks as well as Trevor Lopez, they both did a great job. But yeah, I think that's neither here nor there. But you know, I thought the way they adapted it to, you know, the current, you know, coronavirus setting, I think they did a good job. I thought the fireworks display was incredibly impressive. I mean, the entirety of Washington D.C. was like lit up in smoke, for good reason. You know, no like War 1812 going on here.
We here at the podcast wish the best for the next administration to successfully accomplish all their goals and bring unity to our country, and be the best president they can be.
So I think, you know, to transition us to our next topic, something that was, you know, a standout at this inauguration was Amanda Gorman, who read poetry at the inauguration. And in addition to actually reading at the inauguration, she also read poetry at the Super Bowl. And I think that, you know, it's a great transition to moving on to the Super Bowl, where I think there were two key takeaways that we learned, one of which was Amanda Gorman is an amazing poet. She is very inspirational and I love her work. But in addition, the second thing that we learned at the Super Bowl is that you can never, ever, 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 ever bet against Tom Brady. There's a couple rules in life, and one of them is just Tom Brady is going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, as Thomas Jefferson, you know, famously said, you know, there was a phrase that I don't remember. You know, there are certain things in life: death, taxes, and Thomas Brady winning the Super Bowl, because that guy does not lose.
So, being the certified sports member of the Gradient Podcast, I want to say it right here and firmly now: Tom Brady is the greatest NFL player to ever exist. Any preconceived notions of him just being an incredible system quarterback to the genius of Bill Belichick can be completely obliterated by the fact that he joined a mediocre to bad team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and won them a Super Bowl in the single year he went on under, again, a pretty good coach, nowhere near Bill Belichick and Bruce Arians, but oh my God, what a performance he put on. Yeah. And as much as Patrick Mahomes, the opposing quarterback, who is also an MVP frontrunner in this current season, as much as he played his heart out and literally making 90-degree vertical diving throws, just could not stop Tom Brady.
An incredibly decisive win as well. I mean, the Chiefs just really did not stand much of a chance. I was looking at the disparity of the score.
A lot of people were talking about, you know, Patrick Mahomes is a really good, you know, MVP candidate, a lot of potential there. And I thought, you know, Brady didn't put that, you know, to the dust, but Brady, you know, came in, you know, put Brady's his foot down and said, you know, sit down, it's my turn, you know?
Let me show you why I'm the GOAT, right?
You know, let me show you a thing or two, if you will.
So, something I've noticed with this Super Bowl in particular, and I'm sure it existed with so many other Super Bowls, but it's something that I really took away, is the amount of crazy bets you can put on the Super Bowl. There were people who put $30,000 on whether the coin flip would be heads or tails. There's a giant spread of thousands of dollars on what color the Gatorade would be poured on the winning coach. And there was a couple thousand dollars in a bet whether the initial kickoff would be a touchback and cross the end of the goal line.
What color was the Gatorade? I'm actually interested in that one.
It's a great question.
Orange.
Orange.
I'm probably wrong.
Someone in the comments can feel free to tell us what color it was.
The coin flip was heads. Which lost a lot of people money because statistically in the past and even now, more often than not, the Super Bowl coin flip was tails.
So
I was going to mention like the amount of betting that goes on at the Super Bowl is
legally as well.
Yeah, legally as well. Not to mention, I mean, it's like it's almost baffling. Where like almost anything that could possibly be gambled upon is, you know, like the length of the national anthem.
How many degrees will it be outside that day?
Yeah. Like how cold will it be? You never like it is like almost astounding how willing people are to gamble on completely arbitrary things.
And to sort of extend that claim that Evan just made, this is a rumor. There's no confirmation of whether it's actually true or not. But do you guys remember the man who streaked across the field during the Super Bowl?
I heard about it.
There was an allegation that he put like a $50,000 bet that someone would streak in the Super Bowl, and he did it himself, and it multiplied his payout like 7-8 times.
So then what you're telling me is that the SEC will then investigate this man for insider trading, right? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
The SEC's going to come after this guy.
So two more interesting things that actually came out of the Super Bowl. One, we'll start there, is going to be the weekend's halftime show. What did you guys think? I think, you know, the first time I saw it, I was glad that, you know, it was just prosthetics from what we saw from him before and it wasn't a permanent thing. but what did you guys think?
I thought the pictures and stuff, the imagery was good. I don't typically think the weekend is the best fit for a halftime show because typically in a halftime show you want more of the party theme going on, and that sort of incites the crowd a little more. Of course, there wasn't a full crowd.
You can party rock to blinding lights.
Of course, but I think
the whole dance.
This halftime celebration it was great. But it was completely overshadowed by last year with Shakira and J-Lo. They killed it.
Yeah. So personally, I really liked the set design of the halftime show. I thought like the Hollywood Las Vegas theme was really cool. The whole room
with all the
full
lights,
of lights was really
the camera as well.
Yeah, really cool to watch. I was surprised because I'm not sure. So he grabbed the camera, but there was a camera operator. Like, there was someone who was operating the camera. So there's probably some guy who was just running around with the Weeknd in that little room.
He, like, tripped, because there's, like, a ton of people there. And it was live. Yeah. He could have, like, very easily just tripped over one of the extras and just ruined the whole show.
Yeah. But the one thing that I didn't enjoy was actually the sound mixing. I thought the sound engineering was actually not great. I think it really detracted from the performance because... You know, just I don't know. I think it was just like where the Weeknd's voice was placed in the mix for the live performance.
He was very quiet.
Yeah, it was very quiet. It was hard to hear him singing, and he does have a very good voice. So it was a little, so obviously, him being the superstar that he is with his fantastic voice, that you would prefer to hear him. I think that's pretty obvious. No debate there. I don't think. So
and
I was a little disappointed in that.
One of the most fantastic voices that I think, people all around, the country were so lucky to hear at the Super Bowl actually came from the Super Bowl commercials. And undeniably, it's not an argument that the best Super Bowl commercial this year had to be the Cheetos Shaggy commercial. I thought it was great. It's the best commercial that I've seen so far in a while.
Kidding me? I like the one with Will Ferrell trying to ruin Norway and their SUV purchase.
I don't think I understand the extent to which Jaden adored the Shaggy commercial. This man has been texting me nonstop about how much he enjoyed the Shaggy commercial. Now, to be fair, Jaden and I have a mutual affection for Shaggy. We both think he's a great artist. We both thoroughly enjoy. It wasn't me. We both think it's a great song, but the level to which Jaden has contacted me profusely about how much he adored this commercial, it's astounding. I don't think I'll have to show the records. I don't want to show any receipts, but it's astonishing how much Jaden enjoyed this commercial.
It was a good commercial,
He really liked it.
I can argue with that.
So our main focus for this episode has to be vaccine distribution. And, our first episode touched on COVID-19, what life was like at the beginning of quarantine. And I think so many people can agree with me now that at this point in time, we are willing to do whatever it takes. We just want to get out of quarantine And I think the first step to that is going to be allowing everyone to have access to the vaccine. Now, I think, you know, an important thing about the Biden administration is that they've put COVID-19 solving it as a forefront, you know, for the first couple of months of their presidency. And I think that we definitely see that they're predicting by July, every American citizen should have been vaccinated. And I think that's a great landmark to have. And I think as long as people, you know, still remain cautious, still remain safe, I think things will eventually get better.
I have a couple thoughts on what you said, and also Biden's statement by July, his aspirations to fully vaccinate the American population. First and foremost is obviously we've already established that the American population is incredibly tense, with people who avidly support Joe Biden and people who are very dangerously against him, right? So obviously the entire population vaccinated by July is a very hefty goal, and one that is so very, very amazing if it actually gets fulfilled. But more likely than not, I feel like it's reasonable to assume that it's not gonna happen by July, right? It will, significant progress will be made, and it should be close, hopefully, but more likely than not, it probably won't be a complete vaccination by July. And in the instance that it's not, the opposition of Joe Biden is gonna use that as fuel to create propaganda against him, and possibly even create more tension than there already is. So I think he needs to be a little more careful with his goals, because as much as the Democratic Party was critical of Trump, it's safe to assume that the Republican Party will be equally and even possibly even more critical of Joe Biden.
I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of political commentators have brought up the fact that have brought up the opinion that they think that Biden is actually lowballing with his everyone vaccinated by July. They think that that Biden actually has that his administration is planning to have everyone vaccinated even earlier than that, and that, you know, July is kind of their lowball conservative estimate. And so I think it's interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah, I'm also inclined to believe that, you know, I know that the original reports, not even, you know, specifically from President Joe Biden, but from the, you know, medical experts, we've seen Dr. Fauci bring this up a couple times, was that the original report was everyone should be vaccinated by April. And, you know, things have happened where that's kind of slowed and delayed how fast, you know, vaccines could be distributed and produced. And I think that July, you know, it being pushed back is definitely extremely reasonable. And I think that there is a world where that happens, and I think there's a high probability that that actually does happen.
Well, a quick hot take, whatever Murphy's Law, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. It wasn't the Fauci and his whole team, the same people who predicted that the pandemic would not be nearly as bad from since this prediction from the start than it has accumulated to today, the same individuals who said the mask will do more harm than actual help. So the predictions there, that was that the COVID vaccine wouldn't last longer than a couple months when it first started, right? And look where that prospered to now. So I think we just have to be prepared for anything, and I'm just saying in the instance that it's not done by July, we can expect sort of backlash to Biden's claims, right?
100%. Yeah, I think, you know, it's important that, you know, we as Americans are cautious, but at the same time, I think, you know, the nature of science is that as you learn more information, things are going to change. Like, the what you may claim to be true at one point in time, as you get more information, is going to change. So I think, you know, when a scientist, specifically people who've been, you know, working for the CDC and the National Infectious Diseases Agency, when they make a claim and, you know, that claim changes, it's not because they were necessarily wrong, it's that they have new information that is going to kind of change the way we view things. And I think at the time, it's important that we don't discredit these people, because they, in reality, are the only experts we have to, you know, trust for that type of information.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, to talk on some of my personal experience with the vaccine distribution. So my grandparents, who are nearing 70 years old, they have gotten their first dose of the Moderna vaccine. Moderna, or which one's the mRNA?
I think Pfizer.
Yes, I think Pfizer is. Yeah. So yeah, Pfizer, the mRNA. They got their first dose of that. They should be getting their second dose as of time of recording. In a few days, actually, so they will be getting their second dose of the vaccination very soon. And then my uncle and aunt, who have some pre-existing conditions, have also received their first dose of the vaccine. So, you know, my family has already started getting their vaccinations to those who can. We as 16-year-olds, 16, 17-year-olds.
17, as of a week and a half ago.
Oh, wow. I still have like a month or two.
I'll see you guys in August.
but, you know, us as, you know, 16, 17-year-olds and still in high school, we're like effectively at the back of the line when it comes to the vaccinations. We are like one of the last groups to actually receive it, you know, in order of importance, I guess. So we have quite a ways. We've quite a ways to wait when it comes to actually getting our vaccine. But I do believe as long as the production of the vaccine isn't inhibited for any, you know, like unfortunate circumstances, I think we should be on track to get our vaccines, you know, relatively soon. You know, given the months.
I think it's super important to note that, again, both my grandparents have recently got their second dose of vaccinations, but to clarify that even though people may be vaccinated, there is still a requirement and to wear a mask, because I feel like the notion will be slowly transitioned that once you're vaccinated, there's a less risk of COVID, which there is, but to eradicate the spread entirely, we still ought to wear masks in public and still effectively social distance with the same measures previously instated.
Yeah.
For many of you guys that don't know the news and, you know, haven't really heard about double masking before, it's pretty simple and experts say it's pretty effective. So Armand, walk us through how people should double mask and why people should do it.
Gladly. We do this like a flight attendant does to show the safety precautions? You put it on and I'll...
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to first thank you all for choosing to fly with Air Gradient. This is your captain speaking, and I want to remind you all here today of the Air Gradient motto. We are extremely happy to serve you with comfort, style, and leisure. Now, before we begin our flight, if you would please focus your attention to the screens in front of you, where we will show you the correct safety protocols with masks to protect yourself against COVID-19.
So now Jaden and Evan will demonstrate as I narrate. So first, the individual who shall participate in the double masking shall first grab their first mask firmly, placing it over their face, covering both their mouth and their nose, strapping the strap over their ears, and secure tightly so that there are no open spaces. Right. Now, you should also take your headphones off.
Oh yeah, that should seem important.
Well, I won't be able to hear you, so.
Don't wear your headphones and your masks at the same time. It's really important.
Yes. Next, the individual shall grab the second mask in the same way they grabbed the first one, and place it over their nose and mouth, also over the other mask. And make sure to put it over your nose, because a lot of people don't, and it's not cool.
Really, right? Not cool.
Now, hopefully, they can keep it like that, so we won't have to hear their voices for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, it might be a little bit difficult to hear me. I might be a little bit muffled, if you couldn't tell already.
We'll put captions for this bit.
It's quite muffled. The CDC has come out and said that while the like a cloth mask or a like surgical mask by itself can be about 40% effective, having a surgical mask with a cloth mask over it, you know, as Jude and I demonstrated, should have about 90% to closer to 100% effectiveness when it comes to reducing the spread. So, double masking, having a surgical mask over having a surgical mask and then over a cloth mask should be. It will be the most effective means of reducing the spread when it comes to wearing a mask.
So exactly, yeah, with these new variations coming from South Africa and the UK, I think it's never been more important to be cautious. And learning that, you know, using two masks can drastically increase, you know, your protection against the virus is, I think, good information to know, you know, and it's also great information to help keep you safe.
And if you're feeling especially bougie, you can also wear a hazmat suit over the two masks. As we go on to the next point, I'm wondering if you guys know whether the vaccine is effective against the new strains and mutations of the virus coming from England and South Africa?
Yeah, so I actually was like looking into this today, and I saw that they're saying that I believe it was the Pfizer vaccine specifically is the one that they looked into, has shown a good sign of effectiveness against specifically the South African strain of the virus. So, you know, it's good news for all of us to hear that, you know, we're not going to go into COVID-21 with a completely different strain. So the virus is, you know, showing to be effective against these new strains. So another, you know, format update, we're really rolling these out extremely quickly, that you would notice for this episode is that there is no guest. And I think it's really important that we can continue to provide high quality episodes, you know, to our viewers, but also do it at a rate where, you know, you're not seeing like 3 or 4 a year. And to kind of compensate for that, we have decided that we are going to continue to make episodes, you know, featuring the three of us, but we're going to take the after show, only, you know, real fans of Gradient are gonna remember the after show. We're going to use the after show platform to speak to guests and really get that educated second opinion on all the important issues that we like to cover.
It will really mobilize our production speed of episodes. And it will lower the length of the current episodes. Have you seen our past couple episodes have been nearing 2 hours actually each? And if you notice this one, hopefully it'll be around 30, 45 minutes.
Above all, just like we said almost a year ago, you know, when our first episode of the Gradient Podcast came out, you know, talking about COVID-19, it's important that people stay safe, protect themselves, protect their loved ones, their family, and just social distance and do everything that is recommended to us to make sure that we all can be safe and be protected.
So there's been an underlying theme since our first episode, which was about COVID-19 and how the rest of our episodes have sort of been the influence of COVID-19 and various sectors of teenage lives. But specifically on our second episode, we talked about The Lion King a lot and The Circle of Life. And we've almost come full circle as well when it talks about the beginnings of the COVID-19 virus and sort of how all that played out to now how we're actually approaching a solution. So Hakuna Matata to that.
So it has been almost a year since our first episode. So hopefully you have noticed at least a marginal increase in quality. Us here at the Gradient Podcast have been working hard to ensure that the quality of each episode is better than the last. Looking back at our first episode, some of the segments or bits might have been a little underhanded or not underhanded, but a little bit off topic or even tangential. But you know, with as we go into the next year of the Gradient Podcast, do look forward to even more quality improvements.
So I guess you can almost call it the end of season one of the Gradient Podcast as we go on to a new chapter in our podcasting experience.
So as we move on to a new chapter, I know you want to be there every single step of the way. And the best way to do that is to hit the subscribe button. You can follow us on Instagram at Gradient Podcast, at Twitter at Gradient Podcast, or on Facebook at GradPod. So with all that said, I'm Jaden.
I'm Armand.
And I'm Evan. Thank you for watching. Hope to see you soon.